I'd like to welcome to the PodMD studio Dr. Rosemary Clancy. Rosemary is a sleep specialist clinical psychologist at Sydney Sleep Centre. She focuses on evidence-based sleep treatments and associated mood, anxiety, and substance use disorders. She completed a master's degree in clinical psychology at Adelaide University, then worked as an SWSAHS clinical psychologist, then senior clinical psychologist at Sydney Clinic. From 2014, she has been the specialist sleep psychologist at Sydney Sleep Centre and the director of letsleephappen.com.au. Today, we'll be discussing the topic of toilet trips at night. This podcast is brought to you by DPM Financial Services. DPM is a specialist medical financial advice firm that aims to empower doctors of Australia to make the right financial decisions and achieve their financial goals. We do hope you enjoy this podcast, but please remember that the advice here is of a general nature and is not intended as specific advice about a given patient. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the doctor, not PodMD. If you do have a patient on whom you require specific advice, then please seek advice from a colleague with appropriate expertise in that area. Rosemary, thanks for talking with us on PodMD today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
The topic of today's discussion is about toilet trips at nighttime and its effect on sleep. Rosemary, can you give us a brief overview about taking toilet trips at nighttime?
Essentially, if you wake two or more times each night to go to the bathroom, this is seen diagnostically as a sign of nocturia, right? The sleep disruption that comes from getting up multiple times during the night to pass urine will probably impact your quality of life over time because this can tend to become a habit. So how who does it affect? Generally, one in three adults over the age of 30 experience this sleep disruption through multiple toilet trips at night, or what we call nocturia, and the rate of people affected by this increases with age. So it can be caused by a lifestyle habit or an underlying health problem. So it could be just to assess polyuria, where your body makes too much urine in a 24-hour period. Nocturnal polyuria, when your body makes too much urine during the night, and or it could be a bladder storage problem, when your bladder just doesn't store or release the urine particularly well, or mixed nocturia, which could be more than one of those problems. So what we're trying to assess at first is whether it's a lifestyle issue or an underlying health issue. So what I'm seeing in my insomnia treatment clinics is multiple demographics are affected by this. So people of all ages, I'm seeing people in their 80s as well as young people in their 20s with multiple toilet trips at night disrupting their sleep. That it's regardless of the gender, so men and women. I've seen young girls in their 20s getting up to go to the bathroom multiple times during the night. And in many cases, people have already started to censor their activities and drink less fluids in the evening because they're trying to improve the quality of their sleep by reducing fluid intake. So this isn't necessarily an issue of fullness or urgency. It's not that they're producing a great deal of urine at night. It's just that they're going too many times and they're not, and it's anxiety related. So they may describe that definitely by the second waking and the second trip to the toilet, then they're not producing anything much, maybe nothing, and they're quite frustrated by that.
What are the main risk factors for developing nocturia?
If we're looking at the main risk factors or conditions for this nocturia, it could be caused by a number of things. And this is why we're trying to work out whether there's actually a health issue going on. Certainly, we're interested in whether it might be a urinary tract infection, because that needs to be managed pretty quickly so that it doesn't develop on to potential kidney infection. So it could be caused by a number of things: high blood pressure, heart disease, vascular disease or congestive heart failure, bladder obstruction, inflammation or other problems affecting the bladder. It could be kidney stones, prostate obstruction, vaginal prolapse, menopause, childbirth, pelvic prolapse, edema in the lower limbs, so fluid building up in the lower limbs, reduced bladder capacity, or diabetes types 1 and 2. So other reasons or other risk factors can be psychological risk factors and just lifestyle change in relation to psychological features. So psychological risk factors for anxiety-related nocturia could be inadvertently training the bladder to have a smaller capacity over time just by virtue of frequently voiding the bladder. And I think people inadvertently realise that the frequency of the toilet trips does actually build or develop bladder capacity. So because it's such an elastic organ, the frequent toilet trips mean that it's storing less over time, and the bladder, as elastic as it is, it shrinks over time, shrinks and has less capacity. So it becomes a volume issue. The person's bladder is filling more quickly and signalling fullness more quickly. So this, in tandem with anxiety about sleep and sleep disruption, means that the person could be waking up a number of times because there are normal wakings during the night as it, you know, within our sleep. So the signal happens earlier and more frequently. We may, in our 20s, wake one or two times a night just naturally, and in the absence of having any sort of insomnia issue, then we resume sleep pretty quickly. But as we age, we'll be waking more frequently, and if each one of these frequent wakings created some need to void the bladder in order to, one, fully relax, and so, two, get back to sleep, then that creates a drive to continue to empty out the bladder as fully, as much as possible, in order to not create a further sleep threat or to, you know, take bladder fullness out of the equation in terms of getting back to sleep. So as you can imagine, with these continued what we call safety behaviours of continually emptying the bladder, even when it's not necessary, we actually create more hypervigilance and more performance anxiety about sleep over time. So this is where we start talking about managing with lifestyle change and perhaps some psychological intervention, the behaviours or the control behaviours that start to set up around insomnia and anxiety-related nocturia.
How do lifestyle factors like diet, caffeine and alcohol intake relate to nocturia and its impact on sleep?
So lifestyle factors like diet, caffeine consumption, alcohol intake are really important here with nocturia because they're diuretics, and you've already got one more thing in the equation that's going to potentially disrupt sleep. All right, so a good starting point would be to just cut down on irritants in general as part of a bladder training program. And we'll go into the practical strategies in bladder training shortly. But those irritants we're talking about that could make it more likely that you'll get some irritability and some overactivity would be spicy foods, chili, caffeine as a diuretic, alcohol as a diuretic, any sort of diuretic medications you might be on could affect your urgency to go to the bathroom during the night too. So, and while we're talking about this, it's actually a good idea to start a bladder diary in order to help your health provider with a diagnostic issues, because if you can see the timing and dose of your medications, if they have some sort of diuretic value, if you have noticed that there are some other things that might be irritants, there might be changes in fluid intake, there might be diuretics that you hadn't considered that have there on the bladder diary, so we can see an increased frequency of having to go to the bathroom during the night, then it's worth having all of those details so that it's going to make it so much easier to make a diagnosis and then decide whether it's a more of a medical issue, a lifestyle issue, or a combination of the two.
What are the treatment options for nocturia?
Okay, so treatment options for anxiety-related nocturia. Well, first we'll look at the lifestyle changes, so restricting fluid at night. You can drink plenty of fluids during the day, especially water, but limit fluids, say, 2 to 4 hours before going to sleep, and being sure to limit alcohol and caffeine in the evening if this is quite a regular issue for you. Manage your use of diuretic medications. Talk to your prescriber about whether the medication has quite a substantial diuretic effect, and then discuss that with the prescriber. If you have to take a diuretic medication, then perhaps do so at least 6 hours before you go to sleep, and this could help to reduce the number of times you need to pass urine during the night. You could elevate your legs or use compression socks. So some people experience fluid buildup in their legs, and when you elevate your legs, it helps to redistribute fluids back into the bloodstream and reduce the need to pass urine so regularly. Elastic compression stockings can help by putting pressure on the legs to prevent that fluid buildup. You could potentially have an afternoon nap, but this is where we get into an insomnia CBT treatment. An afternoon nap, if it's a short one, can actually help you feel better during the day, improve your mood. It can also allow liquids to be absorbed during the bloodstream in a short nap. But we want to be careful not to nap too long. If it goes over 20 or 30 minutes, then you'll start to borrow sleep from the night and weaken the buildup of sleep pressure that we need in order to get a consolidated sleep during the night. So we try to ensure that a nap during the daytime is one, not too close to evening, so we mean early afternoon, not late afternoon, and that nap stays at about 20 minutes. Professor Leon Lack over at Flinders University Sleep Centre says that the ideal nap is about 10 minutes and can be refreshing. Most people don't think that would be sufficient for them, but it's worth actually setting your alarm to make it a 10-minute nap and seeing the level of, you know, how refreshed you are after that, because that won't weaken your sleep pressure for that night's consolidated sleep. The reason we're not going over 30 minutes is so as to not disrupt the nighttime sleep pattern with weakened sleep pressure. Now, this intersects with the cognitive part of the treatment for insomnia. And what we're looking for here is the fears about wakefulness during the night and the fears of being threatened by bladder urgency that work together to create a vigilance or a hypervigilance and sleep performance anxiety during the night. And what that does then is lead us into more control strategies that backfire to create yet more sleep performance anxiety and hypervigilance about during the night. And that's about two things: vigilance about sensory aspects of sleeplessness, tiredness, but simultaneous alertness. But it's also the vigilance about bladder fullness. So part of the core education in a CBTI treatment program or cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia treatment program that also looks at nighttime toilet trips disrupting sleep is to look at the core fears we have about both our sleep and our bladder. The next part of this is looking at our attention. And most of us believe that it would be impossible for us to be able to deflect attention or learn something about our attention and have greater control over our attention during the night. But it is actually possible to do that. So one of the things we will do in a CBTI treatment is attention training, as well as looking at our beliefs and our expectations about both our sleep and our bladder control. So alongside that, we'll be doing behavioral experiments to test our fears. So, and we'll also be doing behavioral experiments to increase bladder capacity. So we would first have the person talk to their GP if they do have a history of UTI or, you know, urinary tract infection regularity, then that would be definitely something to have assessed. Once we know that there isn't a current issue of urinary tract infection, then we would look at delaying during the day and keeping a bladder diary, but delaying bathroom trips during the day to build bladder capacity, greater bladder capacity. And with the idea that if you can go for 3 or 4 hours during the day without urinating, then you should be able to go for 3 to 4 hours during the night. And maybe we can keep it down to one toilet trip during the night to void the bladder, and thereafter look at how we can train the attention and give reassurance about our capacity to get back to sleep in the meantime. So definitely Kegel exercises, pelvic floor exercises, and bladder training are a part of this behavioral treatment program. The next part behaviorally is to train our bed to be reassociated with sleep. So what that involves is we're trying to train what has become a negative conditioned association of the bed with sleeplessness. And we're trying to, shall we say, unpoison the bed environment by taking that negative association of sleeplessness and frustration or despair out to the sofa. So the sofa becomes the place associated with sleeplessness whilst we are training to reassociate the bed with sleep. So the person goes, if they can't get back to sleep within 15 or 20 minutes, we'll go out to the sofa and stay out at the sofa just doing something unstimulating until they can see evidence of sleep cues, which would be heavy head, heavy eyelids. If they're reading, then they start losing their place. And we take those sleep cues, and it's not a time-based assessment, it's definitely based on sleep cues, as evidence that their brain is going into another sleep cycle and they are ready for sleep, whereupon they get off the sofa and they go back to the bed to see if they can fall asleep in the bed with that sleep pressure behind them. Now, because of a negative conditioned association, they may well be wide awake as soon as they get back to the bed, and fearful that they're not getting back to sleep. So at that point, if they're very vigilant and alert, at that point we we have the person go out to the sofa again. And we're doing multiple trials of this, especially on the first few nights as the midbrain begins to associate bed with sleep again. So now, whilst this is happening, because of the delaying in toilet trips that is happening during the day and the building of bladder capacity, the person is not going to be going to the toilet when they get up. They will just be going straight to the sofa. So the next part of this is the person is also doing bladder capacity training during the day, and provided they've gone to the bathroom just before they go to bed at night, we're trying to minimize the number of toilet trips that are happening during the night. So this means that even if the person is getting up to go to the sofa to do this 15-minute rule or 20-minute rule, or as we call it, stimulus control therapy, they're out at the sofa, but they're not necessarily going to the bathroom unless there's really accentuated bladder fullness. So at the same time, they're getting a sense of whether they can actually start to feel sleepy again on the sofa with some small or, you know, reduced level of signaling coming from the bladder. So they're feeling some signals coming from the bladder, but not a fullness that they necessarily have to respond to by going to the bathroom. So you can see the two trainings going on at the same time, the building bladder capacity behavioral training by delaying the number of toilet trips they do over a 24-hour period, and that includes during the night. But they're also doing stimulus control therapy training to reassociate the bed with sleep and the sofa with wakefulness and frustration emotion. So those two trainings are going on in parallel.
What are some practical strategies patients can try to manage nocturia and improve their sleep quality?
So apart from the ongoing bladder training, the pelvic floor exercises, we're looking at core sleep hygiene, which is just lifestyle and dietary changes to that are more sleep conducive. That includes just the bed environment being dark, cool and quiet at night, and also dietary changes like maybe reducing caffeine in the 4 hours to 6 hours before sleep. And that would be coffee, tea, chocolate, cocoa, perhaps reducing those in the evening because the caffeine is essentially a stimulant and could disrupt sleep. Also looking at reducing alcohol in the 3 to 4 hours before bedtime, because of the initial sedative effect of the alcohol, but then later, say around 2 to 3 a.m. upon withdrawal, the sedative effects of the alcohol wearing off, so that the person is suddenly now finding increased heart rate, blood pressure, respiration rate, and core muscle temperature, which are then going to disrupt sleep. So these are core sleep hygiene measures that are conducive to sleep.
When should a GP refer a patient with unresolved nocturia?
Once a GP has done the initial assessments to check that we're not talking about urinary tract infections or bladder inflammation or some underlying health issue or medical issue that needs to be further investigated by a urologist, then if it looks like it's clearly related to anxiety around sleep and fears of disrupting sleep if the bladder isn't emptied fully, then we can look beyond, say, just the bladder training program and then look at someone going to a psychologist who specializes in insomnia treatment, or CBTI, the evidence-based treatment for insomnia.
What role does the GP play in the treatment?
The GP represents the hub of all of these combined treatments, both referring to bladder training programs at, say, local women's hospitals, referring to a urologist if medical issues are suspected, continuing to monitor symptoms to encourage the person to continue with their bladder diary. Regular visits can be where the GP monitors the person's bladder training progress, and the GP can coordinate with a specialist and psychologist who might thereafter be working on the psychological issues and the behavioural issues associated with insomnia.
Thank you for your time here today in the PodMD studio. To sum up for us, could you please identify the three key take-home messages from today's podcast on toilet trips at night?
First, assess if there's a medical or underlying health issue for the nocturia, for the frequent toilet trips during the night. Check for urinary tract infection. If it seems that there's not an underlying medical or health issue, then start looking at anxiety and insomnia-related multiple toilet trips during the night. Look to bladder training, which is an essential part of the psychological treatment for both increasing bladder capacity and for assisting with the insomnia treatment. And three, if it looks like it's anxiety-related nocturia in tandem with insomnia, then learn about sleep and learn about insomnia and do an evidence-based cognitive behaviour therapy for insomnia treatment.
Thanks again for your time and the insights you've provided.
Oh, thanks for having me.